This week on Barca Talk, Messi wins the Golden Shoe. The Griezmann transfer appears to be a done deal. Sergio Roberto is banned for 4 games. We're still unsure of Iniesta's next move, and the team is taking a goodwill tour to South Africa this week. In community, Francesc Tomasa of the Barcelona podcast drops by, and in our match reviews, a great win over Villarreal sees Dembele shine, but a bad loss to Levante sees the whole team in disarray. So let's talk. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Barca Talk. Brian Henderson here. Joining me from Madrid, Spain, is your co-host, Gabriel Quiroga.
Brian, my Barca brother from another mother. How are we doing in Buffalo?
I can't hear out of one of my ears, and it's really messing with me, man.
I know. We've been talking earlier. I hope you get that cleared up soon, my friend.
I might have to go see a doctor about this. It's been happening for over a week now. Last week when we were recording and I was in Montreal, it was there a little bit, and over the last few days, it's just gotten worse, and I'm deaf in my right ear. It's very, very unnerving.
Yeah, I mean, my rule is usually after 4 days, if it doesn't go away, go visit the doctor.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I'm gonna have them stick something in my ear, and hopefully, I don't know, give me some antibiotics or
there you go,
whatever they need. I don't know. maybe there's some little creature they can just put in my ear who will go in there and do all the work. And is there any miniaturization technology that
not yet, Brian. There isn't any of these aliens that you speak of that will come and gnaw your ear, so maybe in the future though.
Bummer. All right. Yeah. Well, how are things in Madrid?
Better. As we were talking earlier, I'm working on this mega business plan because I'm trying to work on my visa to stay here long term, so that has been my project all weekend. So I have been uneventful. I've been a good boy this weekend, Brian, so you'd be proud.
Yeah, you seem very together, very sober, very awake.
Thank you.
Actually, you know, Megan, my wife, was saying she really enjoyed last week's episode where it was clear that you were a little bit inebriated.
Yes, it was a mixture. I would say it was about 20-80 of me, like, being tired and inebriated. So
yeah, because it was very late when we finally got to record last week. We're doing this the proper way. It's
the proper way.
It's morning or afternoon for me. It's early evening for you. We're being very professional this week.
We are.
Yes. Now, moving forward, the season is winding down. We've already claimed the double. FC Barcelona has, and I thought that we wouldn't have too much to talk about. But as the footballing cycle goes, there are actually a number of news items to discuss this week. And the first one is, this is breaking news for us because we're recording this on Sunday and this just happened. So what's the newest breaking news, Gabriel?
Yeah, I just saw on Facebook that officially Messi has won the Golden Shoe or Boot. Is it shoe or boot?
It depends on what country you're in.
Yeah, so because Salah apparently got subbed off in the game and he couldn't match Messi's scoring output. So again, what can you say? Another banner year for Messi and FC Barcelona.
Yeah, and I'm trying to check the stats on this. How many golden shoes has Messi won at this point?
This is going to be his fifth.
Oh, wow. Five Ballon d'Ors, 5 golden shoes. I lost count of his trophies. He's a top scorer in La Liga. He's the top assister in La Liga.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Yeah, and that's what you get with Leo Messi.
Yeah, exactly. So let's see. The overall, obviously, Messi with 34 goals. He has to – we're recording this part right now before the Levante match, so he could even add to that scoring tonight. But as we sit right now, it's 34 goals.
Except Messi was not even on the squad for Levante.
Oh, see, that's why, Brian, you're just on top of the news there for me.
So on top of it.
Yeah. So Salah ended with 32 goals. So a great season for him.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping he has the match of the year in the Champions League final against Real Madrid, because to dethrone Real Madrid, they're going to need at least 2 goals from him. And he has had a great season. He's been a lot of fun to watch. His speed, his development, and I'm really excited to see what he can bring the next couple of years into the Premier League.
Yeah, and we're going to hear in our community segment later on when you were talking with Francesc about how, you know, suddenly there are a whole lot of new Liverpool fans for this Champions League final match who are generally Barcelona fans. But for this one match, we're becoming the biggest Liverpool fans.
That's correct. And I definitely think that, you know, that Liverpool definitely have a really great chance of dethroning Real Madrid. But like we said, Salah just an outstanding season. You know, I haven't been able to watch Liverpool just because of the Barcelona matches that we watch all the time. But from what I've seen in the highlights and then Champions League, he's a beast. And I'm really hoping that this is not a one-year wonder.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that he, you know, that, that he continues to perform like this and he has a good long career like that, because he's a very impressive player.
Yeah, he is. His speed, his creativity, I think is, and he's also in the perfect system right now for him, in the Klopp 4-3-3 system, where it's just very counterattack. So really exciting to see what will happen in a couple of years. But again, Messi just continues that train, right? He was a little bit behind with the goals. I think he was at 1.5, then he had a hat trick here, but he just keeps scoring. And I mean, Brian, I mean, it's just been an incredible season. I mean, I just always think back about our first episode when we recorded together, when we were waving the white flag, you know,
yeah,
with the Neymar leaving, we got our butts kicked against Real Madrid. And now the season is just completely 180. I talked about that with Frances, because when we had Francesca at the beginning of the year, you know, we were talking about our goals and aspirations for the season. And I kind of got his thoughts and review of the season. And it's just crazy how, you know, it's a long season and just how quickly everything can change.
Yeah. And I mean, I could be a little bit happier. I was going to say I couldn't be happier with this season. I could be a little happier. You all know what I'm talking about, obviously.
Yeah.
But anyway, oh, you know, I was also reminded that just today I was reading something. I guess it was an interview with Mascherano. You know, he's over there in China now. But he was just recently saying that he thinks Messi is playing even better overall than when he won all his Ballon d'Ors. Just his overall game has gotten so much better. And, of course, Ballon d'Ors, you know, let's be honest, they go to goal scorers.
No, I definitely agree with that sentiment. I think overall, if you just look at his playmaking, he reminds me of Magic Johnson. Where Magic Johnson was such a great playmaker, but then when you needed him to score like a skyhook to win the NBA finals, he would do it. And now with Messi's creativity, just being on, you know, the center of the park to be able to pass. And we're going to talk about the match against Villarreal where he and Iniesta were just, it was just a passing masterclass of what they were doing. It's unfair for other teams to guard him, because if you press up, he goes over the top. If you give him space, he's going to shoot. And so I'm in total agreement with Mascherano that I think overall he's developing more into a playmaking, which includes goal scoring, but also assists. And I think that just makes him just an overall just lethal player.
Well, yeah. And again, yeah, he just won the Golden Shoe. That's for all of Europe. So he's got the scoring chops, obviously. But yeah, his playmaking has also increased. He's increased his assist output as well. And we were also talking earlier this year about how his free kicks, as part of those goals, have really escalated this year.
That's the other thing too, right? There was a track there where he had four goals in a row or five, four free kicks. And, you know, there's less pressure on him to score just because of his ability to play, make, and involve others. And like I said, when we're going to talk about more about the Villarreal game, we had more balanced scoring from other players, but also Messi was able to create so much and create those passing to open up those spaces for other players they were able to convert. So I'm still scared of our midfield going forward, but obviously with our attacking, and we're going to talk about the next news item with Griezmann most likely coming, I think, you know, we're just going to be able to score six goals, five goals, this type of output. That's going to make it really tough for other teams to beat us.
Yeah, it is. I mean, as if it weren't already tough enough.
Yeah.
But let's quick fire through some of our other news items. That was, I think, the big breaking news, and I'm super excited about that Messi gets yet another Golden Shoe. But we got a few more items to talk about and go through them quickly. It looks as though Antoine Griezmann is, in fact, coming to Barcelona, and the deal is done in principle. The newspaper Sport reported that a meeting took place between Griezmann, his sister, Maud, and a legal advisor close to their family, and high-level Barcelona executives at a meeting near the Camp Nou back in April. Citing Catalunya Radio, Sport reported that the meeting was attended on the Barcelona side by President Bartomeu, VP Jordi Mestre, CEO Oscar Grau, GM Pep Segura, and sporting director Robert Fernandez. So this was an important meeting. The big guns were out. And the report went on to say that Barcelona do plan to pay the 100 million euro buyout clause for Griezmann on July 1st, 20 million of which will go to Real Sociedad and the other 80 going to Atletico.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's just, I don't know how I feel about this, Brian, because I think he's a great player, but, you know, romantically, I want more opportunities for La Masia players. And the trajectory that we're going on right now with this big time spending, it doesn't look like that's what the board wants, right? So I understand, you know, Griezmann is going to add a depth that people have been asking for. Hopefully that'll push out some other players that we can get rid of. But at the same time, I don't like this Galactico type of trajectory that we're on. I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, obviously when he turns on the jersey, I'm going to support him because I'm a Barca fan, but at the same time, couldn't we just get him for cheaper? I mean,
100 well, we euros. Can't get him for any cheaper. And actually, no, lead me to the next point about this story, which is that just this past week, Atletico released a statement in the name of their CEO, Miguel Angel Gil Marin, saying, "We're fed up with Barcelona's attitude that a president, player, and a board member speak the way they've done about the future of a player with an existing contract and just a few days before disputing a European final is an absolute lack of respect towards Atletico Madrid and its fans."
I agree.
There's no love for Barcelona at Atletico.
I agree. But the thing is, I don't understand how Barcelona's not going to get sanctioned for this, you know, for this kind of open tampering type of pre-contract negotiation transfer, because you're not really not allowed to do that. Now you can kind of say stuff in the press like we're interested and maybe something like that, but at the same time you can't just like out negotiate when the player's still under contract. You have to wait for those transfer windows. That's what it's for. This happens a lot in the NBA where players do the contract negotiations because they're not legally binded. They can just be like, I'm just talking to my friend. But the way that Barcelona has come out with this meeting and so forth, this is the opposite of that. And I'm surprised that La Liga may not go after them for some sort of tampering rules or whatnot and find FC Barcelona for this type of, behind the wall kind of deals that shouldn't happen. You have to wait for the transfer window to do that.
Right. Well, it's not really a backroom deal. It's at this point, it's pretty out in the open.
But
there's still a problem with the timing.
Exactly. And that's the thing is that I'm pretty sure just in my overall experience in professional sports, you have to wait for these windows. And I know maybe there's a handler for Griezmann who's legally not associated with him that can reach out to Barcelona and say, Griezmann is interested. Let's start kind of working on this deal. That's the way it kind of gets done in professional sports. You know, it's through like third person handlers and this type of thing to not be associated legally. But the way this has been, brought about all year long, to me, I just feel like Barcelona has broken the rules. And I feel like there could be a big sanction, especially how much Tebas loves FC Barcelona, right? I mean, this is just another reason for him to go after us. So, again, I have mixed feelings. I know he's going to add a lot to our team. But again, I think it just limits Dembele's development. And we'll see. I mean, this signing is really just to help us in Champions League performances for the following years.
Right. And just my final note on that is that this reminds me of what we were saying about the board earlier on in this season. You know, we've more or less curtailed our criticisms of the organization and the head office, the president and such, in the last few months. But when we started this season, we had plenty of negative things to say about Bartomeu and the whole board and how they were going about things. And, you know, they managed to avoid any culpability for any wrongdoing, even though there were a number of investigations going on around them, trials and that sort of thing. And everyone has gotten out clean. But here we are again in a situation where it looks like they're going to be under a lot of scrutiny.
I mean, I still don't like them. I mean, I still don't agree with how they're running this just because I think they could be more financially sound and, you know, like we talked about with the La Masia thing. But, there's so much pressure now as we've talked. You know, it's funny because recording this podcast this year, I've really noticed how fickle our fellow Kules are with winning and day-to-day performances, you know? And I know, you know, it's been a great season, two doubles, but obviously we just that elusive Champions League that we wanted. And with the pressure from Kules and the money that they get or potential loss that they don't get, That's why they're going to make these huge signings. But as we've seen in Real Madrid two times, when they pulled the Galacticos era, on paper it works, but you don't really necessarily get all the performances that you desire.
Right. Well, that's the other thing is, you know, silverware is one thing, and that's supposed to be what you're fighting for. But a lot of the presidents, CEOs of these clubs, what they're actually doing is thinking of it as a business. And if they have these Galacticos, then that's good for the bottom line.
Exactly, because it's shirt sales, especially with the new stadium that they want to develop, sponsorship deals, all these other things. So it's a slippery slope, my friend, because the way we're headed, it just seems as though we're headed to a European Super League, you know?
Yeah.
We're only the top eight teams, and I don't want that. I definitely don't want that. I love having the domestic league and having these Champions League matches because they seem more special. But if there's this eight team super team all that super league all the time, I think it loses that kind of cachet, that big time game status. You know, we're seeing it now with with Real Madrid and being linked up with Neymar. I don't know if you've read that.
Yes,
that Neymar might be coming this summer, and that's going to cost them 300 million euros to get him, which is that's like a price of a car.
Which car?
The most expensive car in the world, right? I'm just kidding. That's
but a custom Bugatti.
Yeah, exactly. But a 300 million euro transfer, that's just insane.
Yeah,
insane.
And then he'll get injured and he won't even play.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So next thing. Sergio Roberto, he has been handed a 4-game ban by the RFEF's competition committee after his dismissal in the Clásico. The suspension will run for the rest of this season and will have Sergi out of the first leg of the Spanish Super Cup next season. By comparison, earlier this year, the same RFEF committee banned Marcelo of Real Madrid for only 2 games after a similar offense to the one that Sergi was sent off for. Against Levante, Marcelo kicked Lerma, received only a 2-game ban, and then it was reduced to only 1 on appeal. And Barcelona have filed an appeal to reduce Sergi's ban. On both occasions, the referee was Hernandez, who is tied with David Fernandez Borbalan for red cards this year at 4. At the same time, strangely, he is further down the list for yellows and yellow to reds.
I think Sergio Roberto should have got 8 games for this.
Really?
No, of course not. This is the biggest crock of BS I've ever heard in my life. Like, for example, in the Clásico match, there's no clear angle of the infraction.
Right.
It's like back and to the left. Back and to the left, like the JFK shooting, right?
Yeah.
So, again, it's just a gray area. And I understand maybe, okay, because of the red card accumulation. But at the same time, you can clearly not see the infraction. So, to me, it should have been just, you know, the 1-game suspension of the red card, and that's it. But this... it goes back to the La Liga refs, how useless they are and how much support, you know, they don't get from the federation and how they can be bullied by the teams and the players. And the other thing, too, is just, you know, obviously they've tried to appeal it. I don't know what's going to happen. But at the same time, it wasn't out of malice that Sergio Roberto did that to Marcelo's face. It was kind of a combination of him moving up his elbow. I mean, this is from my point of view. And again, it's so unclear because the action is away. So the camera doesn't have a clear sight to it. So this just shows the kind of incompetence of the RFEF for me.
Yeah. But quickly, next thing. Iniesta is actually not moving to Chongqing Lifan. In fact, we at this point do not know where Iniesta is going to be going next year. We'll know in another week or so. He's said that he's going to announce what he's doing. I checked the other day and it said it was about 10 days away. So there seems to be a date where he will go public and tell us what his future plans are. But anyway, the rumors were that the Chinese Super League club Chongqing Lifan were signing Andres Iniesta, but this week they released a statement confirming that this is not the case. They have, however, signed a commercial deal with him, presumably related to his wine business, Bodega Iniesta. Meanwhile, there are reports that numerous clubs in Australia's A-League are interested in signing him, and the president of that league has gone on record supporting such a move. Now, here's a good one. Tuttosport have reported that Juventus are also looking at him. But given Iniesta's remarks about never competing against Barcelona and not competing in Europe, that would be impossible for Juventus.
Yeah, so where do you think he's going to go?
I honestly don't know. I think the most recent rumors have been somewhere in Japan. But I only take it from the mouth of the Don. So the Don has not said, so I don't know. Just come to MLS.
Well, before he does, why does he have to leave? I'm going to say this again. After his performance against Villarreal, where he was diming everywhere, dude, he still has it. And I don't understand. We can just spot start him. We've talked about all this, but
he wants to leave.
I know.
That's what he wants. I mean, I would be perfectly happy with a Jay Leno situation, right? Where mid-season next year, he comes back and says, nah, I changed my mind.
I'm changing my mind. I'm changing my mind, right? Like,
yeah, screw you, Conan. I want the Tonight Show back.
Yeah, exactly. I want it back. I don't know. I mean, have you ever had – I mean, usually when a player has retired, we usually know the team that they're going to go within a week. And this is kind of interesting to me because I feel like there's still a lot of teams competing for him, and he just has to pick the best one, obviously the best one that's going to be the most comfortable for his family. So I personally would like to see him in MLS because I think he would add a huge – wow factor to the MLS, but at the same time I hate the MLS, so right. I really don't think they deserve them, you know. We could save this for another podcast, but I'm just anti-MLS to the T. But maybe Australia, I read too as well, you know.
Yeah, that could be cool.
That would be cool. I mean, again, it just depends on what he wants to do overall. Does he want to help a league to expand? You know, or is he just looking to get a paycheck like Xavi and just kind of play these kind of exhibitional games in the Middle East? You know, like, what are you trying to do? So
I thought Xavi's decision to go to the Middle East was very much about trying to grow and expand the game and, I don't know, just get a little bit more attention into the league in Qatar.
You know, it is true, because now when I follow professional football, it's like La Liga, Premier League, and the Qatar League. So, yeah.
Right.
He did a good job.
They're coming up big right now.
They're coming up huge. The Qatar League, you know? They got that team. Don't know. So again.
Do you even know the name of the team that Xavi plays for?
I have no idea.
It's called Al Sadd.
There you go. See? Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, we're the yin and the yang. You bring those knowledge tidbits that I missed. Right. So.
Now, speaking of other countries outside of Europe, our victory tour, and I think of it like everything else that's happening this season is just victory tour for us. The first team is going to actually be traveling to South Africa for a friendly match with the ABSA Premiership champions Mamelodi Sundowns on May 16th, which is funny because it's going to be in between the team's last two La Liga fixtures against Levante, you know, on Sunday, and the next one against Real Sociedad. But here's the fun part. The friendly is part of a series of events to commemorate what would have been Nelson Mandela's 100th birthday, and the match will be played in FNB Stadium, which used to be Soccer City, the site of Iniesta's World Cup winning goal, and he will be on the plane for that.
That's cool. You know, the good thing is they picked a place that is really close to Barcelona.
Right. Very convenient. You know?
Oh my God, that's such a long flight.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And the timing is part of the Nelson Mandela thing. So the timing
I get that. I understand that. And that's really cool. That's, you know, an idea on paper that they're just, you know, trying to always promote globally and this type of thing. But at the same time, like, can't they just meet in the middle? Like,
that's well, it's not really a South Africa celebration if they don't play it in South Africa.
But again, like we've been talking, you know, it's been a long season for the players and it's been a long season for us, you know, like just commentating and doing these podcasts and stuff. And imagine we're just like, oh, yeah, Brian, we have we're going to do another show on next Wednesday and it's going to be a 4-hour show. And it's like, oh, my gosh,
I could do it.
Like we're professionals. We can do it.
I can do it.
And it's the same thing with this. It's just, you know, I'm totally behind the global and the idea of this because of Nelson Mandela and all that. But at the same time, can't they bring the team to Barcelona? You know,
just simulcast it in Soccer City. It'll be they're there.
So, like, how many days are they going to go? You know, that's the thing. Like, you go there for a night, spend the night, play the game, come back. Jeez.
Yeah, it's probably going to be at least a 3-day trip.
Oh my gosh!
And I would anticipate that we're going to see, you know, Paco and Dina and them are going to see some action. Maybe I don't know. I mean, because it could go either way, right? We could send all the big stars, have them play in Africa, and then the following week against Real Sociedad, just put the B team in.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
It could work either way, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. I actually would prefer that. They just roll out the B team against Sociedad and just let everyone rest and just kind of, you know, take Iniesta off at, you know, after the second half for his last game. So, this is part of being such a huge conglomerate that FC Barcelona is becoming or is, you know, just you have all these matches, pre-matches, celebrations all across the world. You know, it's not just in Europe anymore, you know, like we've seen them in Asia and the US. And, you know, when you sign with FC Barcelona, this is part of the thing that comes along with it, the travel, the exposure, and flying to South Africa midweek. So,
yeah, just get on a plane, go to South Africa, play a match. Exactly. No big deal. Now, this week in our community, Gabriel spoke to our friend Francesc Tomás from the Barcelona podcast, where they look back on our season, look ahead to our midfield prospects for next year, talk about the influx of fans Liverpool is getting from us in the Champions League final, and you'll hear a firsthand account from Francesc about a young Andrés Iniesta. I really enjoyed cutting this together, and I hope you enjoy giving it a listen.
I'm pleased to have our special guest, my friend Francesc Tomás, founder of the Barca blog and co-host of the Barcelona podcast. Welcome, Francesc, to the Barca Talk.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we talked earlier this year when we were both on each other's podcast, and we talked briefly about our hopes and dreams for the season. So, Francesc, how would you rate this season?
Well, I don't really want to give an exact number sort of thing, but I think it borders on excellent, to be honest. I think a season in which you achieve the domestic double has to be an absolute success. I was looking back at stats from the 1970s and 80s, and basically before Johan Cruyff came to Barcelona, I think we had around 20 titles in around 50 or 60 years. And from the moment that Johan Cruyff landed at Barca, in the last 30 years, there's been 15 La Liga titles achieved. And of course, you know, it seems to be like Barca wins pretty much every league every season. I mean, it's 7 out of the last 10. But I think it is remarkable to know that we are in a position in that every single year we're challenging for the 3 titles. As we've said in our podcast as well several times, I think the most important thing is to notice that La Liga, the league, the domestic league, is the most important trophy. I do understand that Champions League obviously gets people hugely excited, but the best team normally does win La Liga, and that doesn't always happen in Champions League. Of course, I do understand that people are disappointed, so am I. You know, the defeat in Roma is something that we're never really going to forget. I was trying to be very mature and sort of get over it. A week after, 2 weeks have gone, 3 weeks have gone, and it still really hurts. And I think it's going to be one of those defeats that are going to stay with us forever. And to be honest, I think as bad as it is and as disappointing as it is, we don't have the Champions League final coming up in a couple of weeks. It is something that in the future we're going to look back and learn from. I mean, there's been a lot of things done, I would say, below standard in order to prepare a squad to be as decisive and as fit and as ready and mentally focused as they need to be in order to reach this part of the season as in the best possible form, both mentally and physically. So unfortunately that didn't happen, and it's all about looking back and analyzing where we went wrong. Obviously I haven't mentioned La Copa del Rey. We've won, I think it's 5 out of the last 5, and you know, that obviously does help. And when you're challenging for every single title, then this thing can happen. Undoubtedly, it is great to know that we've got a domestic double and we were dominant in both competitions. Just, you know, the Champions League is going to hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Remember at the beginning of the year, we were almost, you know, scared for our lives, essentially, because of what happened in the Supercopa against Real Madrid. And to have the season that we've had, I mean, for me, it's been a success. I mean, super success, right? Especially having the unbeaten streak. And obviously the Champions League hurt. And, you know, it's funny because earlier I was listening to your podcast while you were discussing about the Champions League and La Liga and everything like this. Why do you think everyone is still mourning the Champions League, even though we just won those two? So why is the Champions League still rendered a little bit more important, depending on who you ask, right? For me, I love the Champions, but I also know the importance of the La Liga just because of the extension of the season. So why do you think Champions becomes now, you know, everyone is really sad about it still. Everyone kind of wants to put an asterisk on it.
I think it's a great reflection of the world we live in today. I mean, people are very immediate. I think social media in terms of Facebook, but certainly Twitter and seems to be Instagram. I'm not the biggest Instagrammer in the world, but everything sort of happens quickly and people want success and people want it now. Obviously, every single major team in Europe is challenging for the Champions League every year. And ratings are through the roof in the biggest competition in world football in terms of club, obviously, because we've got the World Cup coming up soon. But I think that's what it is. I mean, when you've got the likes of Manchester City, obviously Juventus, Chelsea, etc., huge major clubs capable of investing huge amounts of money, obviously PSG, in terms of investing, they've got the upper hand as well. But I think it's because it's the culmination of the best of every league that's why people sort of hype it up so much. And unfortunately, when you've got Getafe, Levante, Leganés, etc. in La Liga, people don't really get very excited with that. But I think having 38 matches in a competition and being the best, that is the competition that actually does put you in your place. I mean, Zidane himself, when questioned on it, he always says La Liga is the most important title, and that's the one that I would prefer to win. But and as hard as this may probably sound to say, Real Madrid sort of having the DNA to just switch it on when it needs to be switched on in the arguably their competition. They've won it 12 times. It is very likely they're going to win it 13 times. And, you know, that is something that Barca needs to recover. And hopefully the board, obviously the managers, but I think the board calling the shots is going to play a decisive point on bringing a success in Europe back.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I just know one thing, Francesc. For the Champions League final, I'm going to be the biggest Liverpool fan. I don't know about you.
Absolutely. I've got Steven Gerrard tattooed over my forehead already.
I mean, I just hope that they're able to expose Real Madrid's defense for how bad it really is. And I just really hope, you know, I honestly think it's going to be a very entertaining match with no defense. So I like that. I think it's going to be something like a 4-3 type of game. What do you think?
Well, we had Diana Christine in the podcast just yesterday and she said 2-1. And I would not, 2-1 for Liverpool. A Liverpool fan, sort of half and half. She said, you know, I did say you've got Liverpool first in your heart, and she said no, it even. So I wouldn't want to disagree with Diana, so I'm going to go with what she said, because ultimately it's going to give us the result we want. It's not the result that we need, sort of thing. But a lot of people back in Catalonia would be very, very cheerful and happy and sort of car-wheeling around the streets of Barcelona if Real Madrid did not win the 13th. And I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, I think it would give us closure, right? It would give us that proper closure. We won the two titles and Real Madrid wouldn't get that Champions League. I think that's what would help us kind of get over this season and just make it a super season. So the other thing I want to talk about quickly was the transfers. So, Francesc, I'm a little scared about the next season, about our midfield more than anything. I just don't know if we're going to be strong enough. I don't know which players are going to be leaving. But, you know, if you had to choose, what would you do in the midfield? Like, what would be your first choice of rearranging the midfield, losing some players? What would you do if you were in charge of those transfers?
Well, I think we're ahead of a season, off-season, rather, that is going to be decisive for club future, and not just for this season coming ahead, but I would say for the next decade. I think it's about time that La Masia players were trusted. I think that is the first point. Obviously, Andres Iniesta's leaving us. We were certain it was going to be China. It probably is Japan now, or maybe Australia. Maybe he ends up in the MLS. But regardless, after the press conference, there is no way Iniesta does stay. So he, wherever he goes, he's going somewhere. And with him, he's taking that legacy, that Barca DNA, that know-how. I mean, he's our captain, but beyond the armband, he is his influence, is his ability to always encourage people to play the Barca way. And luckily, we got Busquets still sort of calling the shots. But Busquets and Iniesta and obviously Xavi are different players that add different shades to the game. I mean, with Iniesta, what you're losing is a lot of control up front, someone who can read the tempo, someone who understands when and when not to attack, which is crucial. Obviously, widening the page, being able to look at Jordi Alba when he's overlapping. So all of that is going, and is going with Iniesta's sort of boots and never really coming back. So I think the most important thing is that we nurture our players in order to one day be like Iniesta. You know, I do understand that generations of players like Messi, Iniesta, Xavi, Busquets, they're not going to happen again. You know, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how hard we want it and how hard we wish it. It's not going to happen again to have so many world-class players coming up in such a short space of time. But we definitely have got enough players in our La Masia Academy. I mean, the under-19s just won the European Championship. There has to be someone in there. Seems to be Ricky Puig, one of the main culprits of our victories, really. But there has to be talent that we can nurture. I mean, Carlos Alagna, obviously, being the first choice, but there are others above Sabi that could make the jump. I mean, Palencia, I think, is ready. Cucurella is ready. Arnaiz has been struggling for an injury, but then again, to play the role that Alcácer played this season, if he's fit enough, he should be able to do that as well. Perhaps not just in the coming season, but Abel Ruiz is ready. He's going to be ready hugely soon as well. So there is a crop of talent there that, if nurtured, can be, in a way, second unit. I mean, let's face it, André Gómez, I would even put Dennis. I know Dennis has got lots of fans, but for me, he hasn't shown enough to be a starter at Barca, and he doesn't justify occupying a place that should have and probably could have been for Alagna this season. So Dennis, Gómez, they have to make way, you know. Obviously, Arda Turán, luckily, is not with us anymore. But I think those gaps need to be filled by La Masia players. But obviously, because of the huge void left by Iniesta, I would have thought that Coutinho would move to the Iniesta position on the left. I mean, we saw it against Madrid in El Clásico. When he plays on the right, he can have an influence, but it's his cutting towards his preferred left foot and then shooting sort of from a distance that sort of allows him to make a difference. But, you know, I know Arthur is coming soon. The club seems to think that January seems to be the best moment for him to join us. But undoubtedly, he needs to come a little bit earlier. I mean, beyond that, I think we just have to trust that Busquets is going to continue to be influential. I know he had a lot of haters at the beginning of the season, but Rakitic has been an absolute beast in the middle. Like the game against Madrid, we don't get the draw if it wasn't for Rakitic's influence, and his work rate is second to none. He's been, for me, one of the players of the season for Barca. And, you know, we're just going to have to trust those two. I mean, I know we're talking about midfield, but I really do think that Dembélé has a chance of making the starting spot on the right midfield, particularly at the Camp Nou, because he can sort of push forward. Obviously, he needs to improve his decision-making in the final third, but I know I said a lot of things in there, but I think that somehow answers the question.
I know. When I talk with Brian and I talk with you about this, it's just, you know, we have our certain vision of how we want to see the club run, especially integrating more Masia players. And when we don't see that, we kind of get upset, because that's like one of the reasons, especially for me, that I love this club, is just the ability to integrate young talent and not always just get people from other teams when at their height, you know. But you mentioned also about Iniesta. You know, you love Iniesta. I love Iniesta. So tell me, Francesc, what is your lasting image or one of your favorite memories of Iniesta?
Well, personally, my favorite moment of Iniesta is when I saw him first. My brother was playing for Barca at the time, and Iniesta was 12 years old. He had just sort of driven all the way from Albacete with his dad, Jose Antonio, and mom was there, and sister was really, really little. And I remember that first training session, which actually was my brother's first training session as well. And, you know, every year, you know, they're under 11, so around 12-year-olds, and it was Infantil B. And there's so many kids that sort of are there super nervous on the first day. And Andres was just there. He was just one of the kids. He was the whitest kid in the whole place. I mean, he was so white. He was reflective. He's like he was ill. You know, he was that white. So it was little Casper sort of got the ball, and they started doing rondos, which are sort of circling passing routines that Barca do throughout the whole of the academy system. And he was good, you know. He wasn't losing possession as such. Obviously, I was focusing on my brother because that's why I was there.
Sure.
But the moment that they started shooting, I remember they had the goal was divided. So on the side, they had like different numbers. So 1, 3, 5, 7, and 10, according to like 10 would be top corner, and it was shooting practice. And this little guy just kept shooting 10 and 10 and 10. It was like I've never seen anything like it, obviously, before, but since. It was hugely impressive. And from that moment on, you thought, yeah, that guy's got talent. But I remember at the time, there was Jorge Troitero as well, who was an incredibly talented. He looked like Messi as well. He was tiny, sort of long hair. And he was I would say he was as talented, if not more attacking talented, than Iniesta actually was at the time. But he sort of liked himself a little bit too much, and you know he could get a little bit cocky. Whereas Iniesta, he was just, he was like a croissant, like we say back home. You know, he was so soft and so well-spoken and so respectful. And, you know, fast forward, what, 18, 19 years, and he was crying in the press conference the other day, having been, obviously Messi's going to surpass him hopefully next season, but 35 titles, collective titles under his belt, you know, respect from every single corner around the world, millions of culés obviously crying because he's leaving, having achieved, you know, best and, you know, arguably most important goal in Spanish football history in the World Cup final. At club level, the goal against Chelsea, obviously, we're never going to forget that. And yeah, I think I was privileged to be there at the start and to know what he has gone on to be and become and mean for so many millions of people around the world is just, it's world class. And I'm just really proud of everything that's happened. And in a way, linking to a previous question, I'm very lucky that La Masia could produce something as special as Iniesta and that we are living in this generation so we can witness it.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great story. I mean, I definitely love the stories of, you know, athletes when they're great, but then there's these little stories when they were kids and they have these flashes of brilliance, you know? That's a great story, Francesc, which leads me perfectly to my last question for you. Now, obviously, you're Spanish with the World Cup coming this summer. I'm very excited about the World Cup. I love the World Cup. It's one of my favorite sporting events, especially since it only happens every 4 years. So how do you think Spain will do this year? Do you think they'll do better than the last World Cup? And then also, what do you think is their best lineup?
Wow, okay. It's a difficult moment sort of personally for me because obviously I am Spanish, but I'm also Catalan. So all of the disagreements and sort of both sides of the argument pushing each other and sort of being trying to find little niggles the whole time has me feeling a little bit, not torn, but I don't think I personally can root for Spain as hard as I did, say, four or 8 years ago. But that, put that to one side, obviously, the shape of the Spanish team has changed in the last World Cup and definitely 8 years ago when we won it all, basically. It was Barca dominating the team and the Spanish team was, at the heart, it was Barca, really, with sprinkles of greatness from, like, obviously, Sergio Ramos, Iniesta, arguably Fernando Torres, and that was a different shape up, obviously, now. The Barca players are not as prominent. I think it would be good to see what Iniesta can do in his last great tournament. Jordi Alba, Piqué, obviously a definite starters, and so is Busquets. But beyond that, it's going to be hard to see any Barca players really having an impact. The Madrid players and obviously Atletico players, so Madrid-based players, are going to be sort of the main heart of the team. And I think we've got the makings of going the whole way, but you know, the way that Piqué gets jeered every single time, I think that's going to affect. Say he makes a mistake or the Barca players mess up, I don't know what the Spanish press is going to say. And then that could bring disagreements within the park. But hopefully Lopetegui can bring everything together and the team can sort of gel and go long in the tournament. I mean, being totally blunt and honest, I'm much more eager for Messi to win the World Cup, if I'm totally honest. Not that because it would validate his career, because I think he doesn't have anything to show to anybody, but I think that he deserves it, you know, and he's been so close with Argentina so many times. If Higuain had a clue about how to shoot a ball, that he would have at least three collective titles for Argentina. He would be compared to Maradona right now. Which arguably, I mean, at club level, there is no comparison. Messi's miles ahead. But I think if he doesn't win it this time, that's something that everyone's going to always sort of look back and say, yeah, but Messi didn't win it. In terms of the best 11 for Spain, I'm not quite sure. I mean, De Gea obviously has to start. On the right, I'm assuming Azpilicueta's going to start. Jordi Alba on the left. Then Ramos and Piqué in the middle. I would say Koke and Busquets play as a double pivot, with Busquets being a little bit further back. Then from then on, I think in one side you have David Silva, I'm assuming. On the other side, I'm not quite sure, probably Isco. And then up front, it depends how he wants to play it, but Diego Costa seems to be a good reference. And then someone floating in there, whether that's Cesc Fabregas or either Isco or David Silva, as I just said. Maybe Asensio has a go as well. There's so many variations, but I think the most important thing if Spain are going to go long is to be able to get De Gea to not work too hard, to be honest. And that keeping the clean sheet was a key in previous tournaments that we've won. So see how it all pans out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see what forwards he chooses, the coach. I would either go with Iago Aspas or Rodrigo. I just think they're just a better fit for the system. But again, Francesco, I'm just really pumped to be here in Spain, in Europe, watching the World Cup, because I know in the States, you know, there's quite an environment, but it's nothing like here in Europe. And so I was here for the last World Cup and Spain did not do very well. So I'm hoping they have a better showing. And just like you said, I too am going to be rooting for Messi in Argentina. I just want Messi hopefully to get a World Cup, because I think for me, I think that'll just put him at the, you know, as the best player of all time, even though for me, he already is. So really excited for the World Cup. So Francesc, you know, thanks for taking the time to talk to me about Barca as always. I know we're always kind of messaging through Twitter and WhatsApp, and I always enjoy our banter. So, you know, I hope we can meet up soon, either in London or in Madrid or Barcelona.
Well, let's make that happen. I don't really know where we're going to be, but absolutely. I mean, we've got, obviously, you've got the Barca Talk podcast, we've got the Barcelona podcast. And the thing is, a lot of people may think that we're rivals for some weird reason. Mm-hmm. We're actually not. We're working together to bring the best possible news and opinions to the Barca community. So I really appreciate the chance to speak into everyone that's listening to you right now, and obviously being able to share some of our thoughts. So thank you for the opportunity. And can I say as well, well done for your fundraising. You know, that what you're doing with Houston Culés, I think what you're doing is remarkable. So very impressed. And obviously, if you are listening to this and you haven't donated, yes, just go find me, whatever Gabriel tells you after this. But absolutely go and chip in. We are going to, after this interview is finished, the Barcelona podcast is going to chip in as well. So we're going to do that right now.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Francesc. And like I said, you know, hopefully we can meet up, and, you know, we should definitely try to plan a game in the future to, you know, to combine our podcast and our audience for some sort of event. I think that would be really, really cool.
Well, let's see what we can do. The sky's the limit.
The sky is the limit. Well, Francesc, we'll talk to you soon.
Muchas gracias.
You know, Gabriel, I've already ordered my Liverpool temporary tattoos. I just ordered them today. They're only £3.
Does it just say never walk alone?
It's a whole pack. You know, you get the insignias, you get the LPFC, I forget what it is. But yeah, it's a whole sheet of temporary tattoos. For just £3, you can get your you can support Liverpool for the Champions League final and help your friends do so as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, like we've talked about, we're gonna be the huge, you know, the biggest Liverpool fans on the Champions League final. So that was a lot of fun. So I really enjoy talking with Frances, especially, you know, ever since I've first met up with him in London back in September when I was there for the NFL game, or October, I think it was. We met up for a pint and we talked about our podcasts and Barcelona. So, you know, I'm almost going to nominate Francesc as almost a Barca cousin from another mother.
Oh,
something like this. Yeah.
Barca cousin from another muzzin.
Yeah, exactly. So,
sorry, that was bad.
But I want to thank Francesc for giving us his time, and I always enjoy talking FC Barcelona with him, especially with his unique insight, especially with his brother's story and his story about Andres Iniesta. It's just fascinating to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you guys recorded that, we were getting close to our goal for our FCB Camp Scholarship Fund. But since then, we've actually reached it and even exceeded it enough to send both Oscar and Christopher to camp this summer, and they'll each be getting an extra uniform too. So we're done with promoting that scholarship fund. Well, we've reached our goal, and everyone is happy. But do stay tuned next year, because we're going to kick it off again. We're going to be working with more Peñas, ideally. We're going to raise even more money and send even more kids to FCB camp next year.
Yeah, I mean, great job all around, Brian, to you, Victor, the Houston Culés, and everyone who helped donate. I just think it was such an amazing job to get this goal achieved and to send both brothers and with the extra uniform. So I'm really I'm really happy we're able to do this. But I'm looking even more for next year of how big we can really get it, especially with starting it at the beginning of the season with both Clásicos and having the same ideas with the raffle and different Peñas. I just think we can send more kids
and it would just be a greater community project going forward.
Absolutely. Now, finally, as the season winds down, you know, we're starting to get excited for the World Cup. But for Barca, what do you think about how our midfield will shape up next year? And what do you think of this Griezmann transfer? Drop us a line at barcatalk.net or leave a message on the phone line at 716-795-2853. Now for Barca B and FCB Femenil, Barca B finally got a win this weekend in a 3-2 victory over Sporting Gijón, and FCB Femenil enjoyed a 5-0 win over Levante, but they will have to settle for second place this year as Atletico held on to their lead with a 6-1 victory over Zaragoza. We will have a full discussion about both of those situations this Thursday on our Patreon Extra, so to check that out, become a Barca Talk supporter for $3 a month. Just go to barcatalk.net/support. to become a supporter. Now let's get into this Villarreal match. This happened last Tuesday. It was making up for match day 34, which had to be rescheduled because of the Copa del Rey final. And we came out with a 5-1 victory. It was quite the show. And I think Dembele was really the shining star to come out of it for the most part. But let's start with the lineup, right? We had Cillessen in goal, Semedo, Piqué, Vermaelen, and Digne in the back four, Busquets, Pauli, Iniesta, Coutinho, Dembele, and Messi.
Yeah, I mean, I equate this almost to an exhibition match, right?
It was definitely part of the victory tour, right?
Exactly, right? And it's, especially with Cillessen in goal, the lineup we rolled out. This is what I want to see, but I also want to see this throughout the season, not the Cillessen change, but this kind of lineup. I think, you know, you can see the mixture of subs and star players, right, or starters. And it worked well for the most part. I know Villarreal is not that strong this year, but this is the type of match that we should do it at home with subs in April, you know, right, or in March, you know, this type of match at home. I always feel you go with lesser players at home, right? And your star players away, you know, like you can go with a little bit more lax lineup at home because they'll be more comfortable. The home crowd is going to be behind them. They have less pressure. But when they're playing away, and if we rolled out this lineup, let's say, against Real Sociedad away, I would be very, very nervous. But at home against Villarreal, perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, and you know, I think the biggest changes were in the back four, obviously. Piqué was the only star defender in that lineup, right? We had Semedo, Vermaelen, and Digne. And Vermaelen did a great job filling in for Umtiti when he was injured this season. Turns out that when he's healthy and he, you know, feels good, he actually is a good buy. He's a good center back for us to have. He can deliver. But Semedo and Digne were definitely the ones who stood out as being, you know, slightly, you know, from the bench, right? Bench players.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, they had the support of the crowd. They looked good, you know. And that's the thing. Against Villarreal at home, these players are going to perform better, and they're going to give us a nice victory. Now, if these players played away, maybe Digne has a bad pass here and there and his confidence kind of goes a slippery slope the other way, right? So that's why, like, this type of lineup, we should play this throughout the season. We don't have to play it everywhere. As long as, look, we have sprinkled in Coutinho, Messi, and Dembele, and Iniesta. Obviously, we won't have them next year, but that still gives us enough attacking. And as we saw in the first half, I mean, Barcelona was on fire. How many chances they had? They had so many chances.
They had tons of chances, and they scored three goals. You know, and that first goal, and this is where I think Dembele was really started to shine. It was so early on. You know, it was Coutinho got the goal, but it was Dembele's run and resulting shot that was blocked that Coutinho got on the end of. And I mean, the shot that Dembele made, the goalkeeper didn't even punch it to safety. It took everything he had to just get his hands to it at all, and Coutinho was just on the other end of that to put it away easily.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the thing is with Dembele, you know, he's shown flashes. And you can just see in this match, for example, just how much more comfortable he was. Now, for me, he still holds on to the ball a little too much. And I think he really needs to work on that because that'll just make him a better player just playing in the system, touching and going, touching and moving. Because with his speed, as we saw in this match, he has lightning speed. And we have to use that in spaces. But if he holds onto the ball too much, the defenses are able to collapse and he has too many one-on-one opportunities. But for me, like you said, Dembele for me was the star of the match. And according to the Who Scored his stats line, he scored a 10 out of 10. So overall, very impressive match for Dembele.
Yeah, and then of course there was the second goal that Paulinho put away, but it was Iniesta's pass. out to Digne that set everything up. And that pass, it made Digne and Paulinho's job super easy. And what's funny is, like, on the replay, Bien had the virtual wall to show that Digne had part of his shoulder barely on the other side of that wall. So they're not saying that he was offside or anything, but they were just showing it and how tight it was. And at that moment, Phil Shane remarked that so often they complain about how offside calls are, you know, denying goals. And Ray Hudson's response made all the sense in the world to me, which is that, you know, that's what people are coming to see is goals.
Yeah.
It's a real bummer when, you know, all these offside calls, especially the really tight ones. It wasn't in this case, but whenever those really tight offside calls deny a goal, it's like, man, what did we come here to see? We didn't come here to see offsides get called.
And the refs are not the stars of the game, right? So
stop making it about you, refs.
Yeah, exactly. But again, it starts with the Iniesta pass, to be able to see that, the perfect weight that he gives to Digne to roll onto.
I know.
And then obviously Digne's center, you know, if he waits a half second later or half second after, it doesn't have the same, you know, Pauly got open because of that pass. And of course, Pauly hustling like he always does, was able to just stick his big toe again and just get another goal for the season. So how many goals is that for him this year? That's crazy.
That's nine or 10.
Oh my gosh. Could you, again, remember how my whole love and hate of Paulinho? And, you know, this is what I'm saying, Brian. Next year, I'm really, really hopeful that Valgrin has learned his lessons about using the substitutions. And this is a perfect match for Pauly, because Pauly is so physical and he's much better than what Villarreal is going to dig out for their midfield, you know? And so at home, against Villarreal, this is a perfect setup for Pauly. And again, Pauly hit another goal for us.
Yeah. But then, oh man, like, I could talk about this goal, this next one, for a while, actually. This was the 45-minute goal from Messi. And for me, words can try to describe this goal, but they will never do it justice. But the way that the play unfolded, it sort of happened in three phases, right? So first, Busquets plays the ball into Messi. He has one defender on him, turns to beat him, and then starts his run. Coutinho's ahead and to the left with two defenders on him. Then, second phase, those defenders leave Coutinho to run into the box while Messi comes out wide, and they close him down for the moment, forcing him to play the ball back to Iniesta. And finally, before Iniesta even has the ball, Messi is running in behind. So Iniesta one-times it back over the heads of the defenders, and Messi massages it into goal with his left foot on the volley, somehow just caressing it around Asenjo and just inside the post.
I mean, it was an okay goal, Brian.
Oh, please. Please. Don't even try to be cool about this.
I'm just kidding.
All I could say about it when I first saw it was unreal. That was I wrote that down just so that I could go back and look at it, and I've watched it numerous times since.
It's almost getting to the point where it's just the goals that we score are just, we're spoiled of how beautiful they are.
Yeah.
I think for me, when I first became a Barcelona fan, back in the 90s, I want to say, this was the never style. And obviously when Pep came, it has become this style of just this beautiful, elegant passing and finishing. I think in my whole soccer football career, never came close to a goal like this.
Oh, no.
You know, like, where you have such intuition with a teammate that you don't even have to look. I mean, if you watch Messi dive up and then dive back, Iniesta already knew exactly what he was doing. And to me, you know, like you described the whole play, but obviously the Iniesta pass, the touch and the pace to go over everyone, but also just die, and the way Messi just finished it, it's a thing of beauty. Again, another just poetic goal. And it's, you know, it's one of the last goals we'll see of Iniesta and Messi link up like that. And the way they celebrate it too, you can kind of tell as well. But again, just as you described it from front to end, just the passing is just incredible. And especially, I'm counting right now because I have the screenshot right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Villarreal players in an area that's maybe 20 square meters, 30 square meters, something like this. And they were able to find the hole and score a goal. So again, and for me as a left footer on that, just like Messi, I would have not used my left foot. I would try to use my right, but if Messi just changes up the speed and the goalie couldn't make a save, you know, and it's just another great goal for Messi.
I know. And from the angles that are available from the cameras, I honestly can't even understand the physics of how how that finish worked, because it seems like where he made contact with the ball was sort of toward, it was on the inside of his boot, but it was sort of towards his heel, and he managed to get enough English on it to first get past Asenjo and then also kind of curve in towards the far post.
It's a tight angle again, right? So either the goalie's going to make it, the save, or it's going to go in the goal. And the other, you know, those are the two options. It's not going to go wide. But again, Messi's first touch, it's a combination of first touch pass. You know, it's not, he's not trying to kill it, where most players would have tried to hammer it home and you have a more chance of having an unforced error that way. Again, it's just the technical ability of our players on Barcelona is just unreal. I mean, if you watch, Brian, if you just watch a mid-tier table team in La Liga, you know, like last night I was watching the Sevilla Derby. Yeah, there's players that are really good, speed, physical, and their technical ability is, you know, really well, but it doesn't even compare to like what Iniesta, Busquets, Messi have. It's just off the charts, unreal, their first touch and their passing. It's insane.
Yeah. Now, Villarreal did manage to get a goal, and it was mostly just kind of an unfortunate series of events for us. And ultimately, not too big a deal. We won the game 5-1. We were dominant throughout the whole match. But Fornals took the shot, and I don't even think that initial shot was actually on frame. But it somehow, but it banked off of Sansonet to get into the opposite corner of the goal. So Cillessen was already going the direction of the original shot, and then it banked off of Sanson to go into the goal. And it was just one of those kind of fluky things, right? Or was there some bad defending going on?
No, it was fluky. And I was going to put on my notes. All Villarreal had to do was do that 5 more times. Just the old ricochet play.
Right.
You know?
Easy.
Just have a guy in the center, and I'm going to kick the shit out of the ball to you, and then just, you know, and then we'll get another goal that way.
And just make sure it's not a handball, and we'll be fine.
No, it's a fluke goal. I mean, obviously, Villarreal in the second half had some more opportunities, but at the same time, we were in cruise control.
Yeah.
You know, up 3-0.
Of course.
And to me, it was just a fluke goal. It was really not that much bad defending. It hit the ricochet. Cillessen was on the ground, and it just, you know, went the other way. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? Now, but in the latter half of this second half of the match, this is where Dembélé started scoring his goals. But the first one he got in the 87th minute, so we're almost out of time. Dembélé gets his first goal of the match. And really, this was all Rakitic, actually. He was out wide playing attacking midfielder like he used to, but hasn't been doing lately for us. And he puts it first over the head of one defender to get into some space. Then he comes in, puts the ball through the legs of another, and then he puts the cross in to give Dembélé really a super easy tap in. So Rakitic did all the work for that goal.
Yeah. You know, it's funny to me because I always liked Rakitic when he was in Sevilla. And I know when we signed him, you know, I wasn't super enamored with the pick. I thought he was going to be a decent player. But man, Brian, he has had one of these seasons this year that have been off the charts. He has gone up to another level, and he had a great season, his first season, the Champions League victory, where he had a major role. But I feel this season, not only has he been important to our midfield, he just does the things he knows what he has to do, and he just does them really well. Like, he's not asked to make all these crazy plays and so forth. Unfortunately, Brian, he had his worst match against Roma.
Right.
And I don't fault him at that for that, because he was so tired. He needed a rest for that, you know? This season for me, he's been spectacular. So I'm excited to see what happens. But again, this play for me is just a great play by him. You know, he does have flashes of brilliance like this where he can make that type of play. So
right. Well, also, he's been in the position mostly this year of being more defensive. I mean, he was more attacking earlier in his career at Sevilla, and maybe earlier when he first started with us. But since then, he's been shifted to being more of a box-to-box midfielder. And now this season, he's been more of a defensive midfielder. Getting progressively pushed further and further back to give Busquets support or play the Busquets role when Sergio's out. And you don't get to, he doesn't have the opportunity to shine the way he can in these moments like he did in this one.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, if we look back at the, you know, the quote unquote important goals of the season, I mean, remember the classical goal where he just went coast to coast with peanut butter toast on that first goal, right?
Oh, yeah. That was so good.
Correct. And so he does have these flashes of brilliance, but I just feel, you know, his partnership with Busquets, the way they understand each other, they play well off each other. And especially in this goal where he was able to do that little move, it was almost like he just put the air brakes, you know, with the ball, and the player just flew right by.
Yeah.
You know? And then he was able to find Dembele on that play. So for me, Rakitic, not only has he, you know, he was always good. But for me, I just think he went up another level this year. And I just think he's had one of his best seasons of his career.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad to have him. But that 93rd minute goal, Dembele's second goal, that was all him. How he got the ball on a counter. He went straight downfield, taking on two defenders. With Messi out to the right in support, but Dembele, he just took it all the way down himself, beat Alvaro, and then got the shot off, chipped over Asenjo just as Costa was coming in for the tackle, and it was a really nice move that he made to beat Alvaro initially.
Brian, I love these, as we say in Spanish here, cuchara, spoon, goals.
Yes.
Yes, because I could never do him as a player, and I was always super jealous when I watch him on TV and so forth, and this was a really nice cuchara goal by Dembele, going at full speed, you know, and able to complete and convert that goal. He had Messi on the right, and he was able to have a nice little chip on that. This is what we would hope for, closing out the season, right? Dembele finishing the season off really strong, going into the offseason with some good confidence. And then, you know, just Coutinho. I mean, I'm super excited to have Coutinho for the full season going forward, because I think his link-up play with Suarez, Messi, you know, the rest of the team, I think he's going to provide an amazing dimension going forward. So to me, Dembele was the man of the match. Like, I agree with the who scored, but I think everyone had a really great match, considering it's the second to the last game or third to the last game of the season. Really nothing to play for except for the unbeaten streak and pride.
Yeah, but that was not to be, as it turns out. So against Levante in the Ciutat de Valencia, that just blew up, right? Everything failed.
As we were talking earlier, because we recorded half of the show before, and when we recorded last, I was saying, yep, the last thing I'm holding on to is this undefeated streak. And,
right.
You know, of course, you text me, you said, I jinxed it.
You obviously did.
Yeah, obviously I did. You know, my voice, my opinion heard around the world, you know? So,
yeah. I'm sure you weren't alone, though. I'm sure there was a critical mass of people saying, we're not going to lose this.
Well, the thing is, you know, I have a lot of questions. Let's get into the lineup first. So,
all right.
Why don't you tell us what the lineup was?
The lineup was Ter Stegen in goal, and then the back four was Semedo, Jenny Mina, Vermaelen, and Alba, midfield of Busquets, Rakitic, Iniesta, and as I saw it was kind of a 4-3-3. Yeah. And then up front we had Coutinho, Dembele, and Suarez.
Yeah, so, you know, okay, like we talked about in the previous match against Villarreal, we had a mixture of, you know, starters and some B players. And again, we had that here too. So looking on paper, I'm looking, okay, it looks pretty reasonable. We have Busquets and Rakitic there for some defensive help, midfield. And then obviously, you know, the thing that I would kind of look at before would be the Mina Vermaelen pairing. But at the same time, I understand. Just give some, you know, PK a rest, and obviously Umtiti's out, so I totally get that. Now, what I have a question just from the get-go is when Jordi Alba is the best defender we have there, he needs to focus more on defense first, get into the match, and then kind of work his way. But for me, I just think that, you know, a bunch of our players, we kind of just kind of cruised through this. We just thought that we were going to just go through, you know, head to Valencia and just get this easy victory. And obviously, you know, when we play away with a B team, like I just said earlier in the Villarreal match, it puts a lot of pressure on these players who normally don't get that pressure. And obviously Mina and Vermaelen, just, you know, not their best match ever. And as I told you before on Twitter, everyone is ready to ship Mina to Juventus or wherever, whoever will
Liverpool.
Take
Liverpool.
Yeah, wherever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. You know, I mean, I do think that Mina made his share of errors, but of course the midfield wasn't doing him any favors either. And
correct.
You got him with Vermaelen, and I'm not sure how much the two of them have played together. So when your central defensive pairing are two guys who haven't seen a whole lot of minutes at all over the season, let alone together, you can't expect very great results.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is that, you know, Semedo too, you know, for me, Semedo and Alba left Mina and Vermaelen to dry too often early in the match. You know, especially since they haven't played well together, I just feel like you need to just focus on defense. Be solid back four, not a back two with two wings going up and down, because Levante just exposed us because of the lack of communication, chemistry that was Mina and Vermaelen. So I know this is the first time that they played together. And like you said, maybe in practice they paired up, but it's not the same when you're away in a La Liga.
Right. And even though Vermaelen had to come off with an injury fairly early on in the game, Piqué came on for him around the 30th minute or so. They were down to 10 men because Vermaelen was off the pitch already injured, and that's when Levante scored their second one. But even when Piqué came on, things were still not clicking, right? They weren't firing. Yeah. And of course, now we're down two goals, and we're trying to really push forward. Piqué is turning into a forward player more often than a defensive player. So even when Piqué came on, he wasn't like the voice of defensive reason.
Correct.
Right?
Exactly.
He was like, I'm going to get in there. I'm going to help.
And the other thing too, for Piqué, he probably, you know, is on the bench. He's like, I'm not even going to play today.
Right.
And then all of a sudden Vermaelen gets hurt. He's like, God damn it. You know, that's like, I mean, you just seen his face. He's just like, oh man, really? I got to come in now. And so obviously I just think his mentality was not into the match. Maybe he was going to come in later on, but at the same time, coming in 30 minutes, you know, he pretty much played a full match, essentially.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He pretty much played the entire match. So, I mean, I don't want to break down every single goal because this was a very high-scoring game overall.
Let's break down the first goal, because I think the first goal was kind of a microcosm of the whole match,
sure.
Right? I think the way that Semedo and Mina overlapped on defense there was just the lack of communication and trust. You know, Semedo, again, a lot of times this year he's been caught on these overlaps. And for me, they're just really basic soccer football moves. You know, as a winger, you should expect this type of movement all times. And he basically left Mina out to dry. Mina had to chase the guy to the corner, exposing the center. And Boateng hit that. And he didn't hit a clean shot, but he hit it well enough to go hit the post and hit a goal. If you watch the replay, Semedo is trailing the play, and if he was in better position from the get-go, then Mina would have covered the center. And so for me, just that whole just chaos going in that box was the microcosm of our defensive woes for this whole match.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think this is an important point that you're raising, that because I was aware of all the whistles and the calls for Yerry Mina to get shipped off somewhere else during the match as well, even though I'm not on Twitter, I got the sense as well. I mean, it was showing up everywhere I looked. And, you know, here's the thing. You defend as a team. You attack as a team. Finishing is an individual thing, right?
Yeah.
There are certain moments that are more disposed to individual performance. But defensive stuff is all about the group. It's all about the back four, or, you know, however you want to work it out tactically. But it's about a group positioning and movement and understanding. It's not down to one guy.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, that's the thing. I just think that, like, especially this match, you know, we came in. I just think Busquets and Rakitic didn't have their best matches. Their passing accuracy was not that great.
Yeah.
And also just their intensity was just not there. I mean, you can just see it. And so when your intensity is not there and the other team is really bringing it and you can't match them, even though it is just Levante, they're professionals and they were able to make the best of their scoring opportunities.
Yeah. And, you know, we were just saying about the Villarreal match. Yes, it would be nice to have that completely unbeaten season. And we've already broken the record and set a new record for consecutive games in La Liga unbeaten. So that's already a milestone. And it would have been nice. It would have been wonderful to have the fully unbeaten season. But at the same time, you know, Busquets and Rakitic, these guys have been playing just about every game all season long. And it's a long season, right? It's grueling. And we're already towards the end. We've already won the championship and the Copa del Rey, and we're already out of the Champions League. Aside from this small thing that you can point to as another achievement, what do these guys really have to fight for? Not a whole lot. Because it's going to go down in history as an insignificant thing until some other team is starting to knock on the door of surpassing it.
Exactly. That's a good point. And for me, when I was watching the match, I could just tell from the get-go. I mean, you know, I'm a body language expert.
Right.
So I could just tell that, you know, just from the get-go, Levante was fired up, you know. And these away teams, when we play away, they played the best potential versions of themselves. And so it's just like Boateng, like this guy hasn't done anything this season. And then all of a sudden he's creating havoc, creating opportunities. Like he looked like unstoppable. We just didn't know what to do with him. And again, for me, it's just Alba and Semedo. When this is happening, Balogun has to tell them to just focus on defense, keep the shape, keep the lanes, and we would have been fine. But when we keep trying to bomb up that wing, we expose those holes behind them. And now Mina and Vermaelen are chasing, and they were just crisscrossing behind us. So my personal opinion is I still think Mina should be on the team. These are two matches that we throw him in against a partnership that he has no idea with, has no experience. And people are just automatically just like, oh my God. I mean, it's hard to play center back. It's a really hard position to play.
Well, what I was telling Megan was after the match is, you know, Kules are like this sometimes. If a player in their mind is to blame for getting scored on or whatever, like in this case, it's Yerry Mina, right?
Yeah,
they have no patience for a new signing who can't deliver immediately, unless they came from La Masia. Then they'll get all the slack in the world, right? Yeah. If Yerry Mina had come through La Masia, they'd be like, well, you know, he'd made some errors, you know, but he's. You know, he'll come along, and I can sympathize with that, actually, because we've talked many, many times about how I'm the same way. I give extra slack to a La Masia player than I do to a new signing. But, you know, Yerry Mina, he's only 23. He came in midseason. He hasn't seen that many minutes, and I've seen him make his errors. He has his spacing issues. But the same is true of Semedo as well. And both of these guys were brought in as, I think, future growth potential players.
Correct.
Right? They weren't meant to be immediate impact players. And if I may be so bold as to propose, maybe Valgreen was just trying some things out in this match. Again, he has nothing to fight for.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things I saw on Twitter is, you know, Valgreen essentially sacrificed Champions League for the quote unquote unbeaten streak. And then all of a sudden at Levante, he rolls out this team. So that's one of the criticisms I'm seeing. And I get that at the same time.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just didn't have it this match, you know, we just didn't have it. And, you know, we started to have, as you said, the comeback that meant nothing, right?
The lowest stakes comeback ever.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, that's the one thing I do like is that we did, fought back, you know, to come back and to make it interesting at the end. But again, just right from halftime, giving up that goal within a minute,
just
those simple football rules that you just can't allow happen, we allowed happen. And that to me is just really lazy. And for me, I just think Jordi Alba was totally unconnected, just didn't want to be there and didn't want to play. He had some balls today. I mean, he had some nice plays here and there, but at the same time, I remember at the end of the match, he got a ball and he just let it go out of bounds because of a bad first touch. And you can just tell he just was not focused. And to me, if you have a couple players like that, you know, with Busquets, Rakitic, and Alba just unfocused, not playing at their, you know, even 60%, then all of a sudden the other team has an advantage, a severe advantage, because then now Mina, Semedo, Vermaelen are on islands and they can just be exposed.
So essentially all of our back four players were off their game, and their support in the central midfield were also off their game. So, you know, what do you expect is going to happen? We're going to lose bad.
Yeah.
But Coutinho, on the other hand,
correct,
showed up, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. And I would have, you know, there was a couple free kicks that I wish Coutinho would have taken, because I just think he's a more accurate free kick taker than Suarez. But like you said, Coutinho had what, two goals?
Three. He had a hat trick.
Yeah, he had a hat trick. And so he was definitely, as I would say in Spanish, enchufado, like plugged in, you know, and he was really going after it. But again, there was no connection to get him the ball as often. And then when he had the passes, like Dembele was a no-show, basically, match, you know?
He came up big in that Villarreal match, but in this one, he just wasn't getting around them. They were shutting him down. Nothing.
Exactly. And again, maybe this is a match where we needed Paco instead of Suarez, because maybe Paco brings a different dimension just at the beginning, then you can bring Suarez off the bench. I don't know. You know, this is obviously after the fact that we're just watching this match. And to me, I just don't think it's that big of a deal. I don't think it's, you know, we lost. Okay. Would have been, like I said, I would have liked to have the unbeaten streak, but at the same time, this is what we get for not focusing. And that's why we need to have players be players when they're asked to perform, to be more focused and really fight for their job, essentially.
Yeah, true. And I was actually just briefly texting with a buddy of mine in between the end of the match and when we started recording. And, you know, he was saying, you know, sorry about the Invincible season falling apart. And my response is, you know, it would have been nice to stay undefeated, but it's better to get the taste of defeat back in their mouths now rather than next season at the beginning.
Yeah. I like that. That's a good idea. And also just to have that, right? Like, so now we have to improve. And, you know, it goes back to the thing, you know, when we don't have Messi, I just feel like all of a sudden we kind of go into those matches where we feel like we're, or maybe the other team feels that they're even with us. You know, it's kind of one of those psychological factors. They don't see Messi. Messi didn't even make the trip to Valencia. And all of a sudden the team are like, okay, Messi's not going to be there. We can maybe do something here or there. And maybe they just don't care. And we can equal or better them with energy and our crowd. And you saw the crowd. The crowd was super into it, obviously. And obviously Levante has done very well in the second half to not get relegated. They won enough games in the second half to really, you know, survive La Liga, and, you know, they're going to continue on La Liga next season. But again, they just brought it to us. And even with a 5-1 lead, we almost came back as well.
Yeah, we came so close. And I really for a moment thought that we could make it happen. And because we were getting a lot of chances towards the end of the match, and they were pretty good chances. But then also I think that there was something about, you know, that the mental game was also still breaking down. We weren't finishing some of our better opportunities and putting them away.
And that's the thing, right? I think we had 5-4 in the 70th minute. So I definitely thought, you know, with 20 minutes left, it was going to give us enough opportunities. And if, you know, Suarez missed a really bad header, he was completely open. And those are some of the things that, you know, Suarez, for all the great things he does, sometimes fundamentally, like on that header, all he had to do was just put it on target. He skies it. You know, and you don't know when you're going to get all those opportunities again. But again, like you say here, a bittersweet hat trick for Coutinho.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I mean, I'm, you know, with Coutinho, man, I'm really excited for what the upcoming season is going to be, because, you know, what he's been able to do for this second half in these La Liga matches, he's really come in on with goal scoring, playmaking, the passing, and his energy is something that I like about him, the way his movement is. And, you know, especially having him fresh for the Champions League campaign next season, I think is definitely going to help us to hopefully advance further in the Champions League next season.
Yes, and I've been reading things this past week about Coutinho and Barcelona versus Coutinho at Liverpool. And of course, you know, his skill, his invention, his, you know, his ability to see, his vision, those are all the same, but apparently he's been really increasing his work rate here at Barcelona above what he was putting in his performances at Liverpool. And that's what we're seeing also. We're seeing a really good work rate come out of him in addition to all of his great skills. And so I'm anticipating that Coutinho is really going to be the man to fill in that spot that belongs to Iniesta. And of course, he said that, you know, there is no substitute for Iniesta. We agree. There is no, you can't be the new Iniesta. There's no such thing, right? It's kind of like, despite all the people saying, you know, so-and-so is the next Messi or whatever, there is no next Messi, right? He's one of a kind. And so the same is true of Iniesta. But I do think that in that left mid position, attacking left mid position, Coutinho is going to be fantastic next year. And we could still start getting back into a 4-3-3 kind of thing with him in there.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the other thing too, I just think also just the change in leagues for Coutinho. I think the two things, as small as they may seem, I think the weather playing here in Spain definitely is going to help him, because, you know, obviously the climate in the UK is a lot colder. This is more, you know, Barcelona is more similar to Brazilian weather. Happy weather to play in football, right? Like, it's just good weather. Then the other thing too is just the competition, that here in La Liga we don't slide tackle as often as we do in the as they do in the EPL. So I think also that, so maybe he's able to work harder because also he's not taking a lot of challenges as he did in the EPL. And I think overall, like, like we said, I just think his work rate and his ability to score goals like he has been, you know, the future is bright with him. And I'm really excited to see, especially what he does in the World Cup and also in the upcoming season. The other thing too, did you notice the goals of Levante were absolute golazos too?
Oh yeah, they all were.
You know, and that's the other thing. It's, yeah, they were defensive breakdowns and, you know, but again, it was just, oh man, like that I think was the fourth one where the guy just hits it on top of the box and the upper 90'd it. I mean, that was a golazo. And so, you know, those are things that you just can't predict, but at the same time, we should have done better.
Yes. Now I do want to finish this up actually with a question for our listeners. To respond to this, please drop us a line at barcatalk.net or give us a call on the phone line 716-795-2853. And my question is, should, in your opinion, we've expressed our opinion, but in your opinion, should Yerry Mina be sent to another club? Should he be exiled or should he be kept on with us? Give us your responses and feedback and we will talk about it next week on the last episode of the season of Barca Talk.
I personally think Mina's here to stay. We need to give him a full season. And I think he will get better because of his size. I think it's something that we could use. But again, I just think overall, just as you stated earlier, defense, team defense is a team concept. And you just can't blame one player. Yeah, on those one, like two or three of the goals, yeah, Mina is right in the middle of it. But before it even got to that point, it was turnovers, bad passing, bad communication, running back, and just letting Levante run rampant on us.
Barca Talk is written by Gabriel Quiroga and myself, Brian Henderson. The show is edited by Brian Henderson, and the music is also by Brian Henderson. Gabriel Quiroga is our promotion and social media manager, which means this is a two-man show. Go ahead and be a part of it. Give us your comments, questions, topics you'd like us to discuss. Visit barcatalk.net and find the contact page or one of our social media channels. And if you want to support the show, click on the support tab at barcatalk.net to do that. Remember to subscribe, rate, review, and spread the word about Barca Talk. Until next week, I'm Brian Henderson.
I'm Gabriel Quiroga.
And this is Barca Talk. Thanks for listening. Visca Barca.
Visca Barca.